Ryan and his warrior group struggle across the treacherous Texas desert to find the truth about Trader. But an enemy with a score to settle is in hot pursuit, and so is the elusive Trader. The pre-dark city of Sonora, preserved for a century in the salt and sand of the Nukescape, becomes the staging ground for a showdown between mortal enemies. Deathlands 64, Bloodfire. Deathlands Devil Riders is a Cutting Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Timberly Chanel, Kate Torrey, David Elias, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Matt Webb. Sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games. Keep listening for a special preview after these announcements. From Stony Man 72, Rolling Thunder.
There seemed to be only one other option. It was a hell of a lot riskier, but Lyons figured he had to go for it. Hang on! He floored the accelerator. As the rental car sped forward, Lyons jerked the steering wheel, swerving past Atiha and crashing through a wood rail fence separating the parking lot from the docks. Blunt Canales realized what his partner was up to and shook his head in disbelief.
You're nuts, Iron Man. It will never work.
Never know till we try!
Lyons kept his foot to the floorboard. Soon they were racing diagonally across the docks, headed straight toward the speedboat, which churned up a wake as it began to pull away.
Oh, no you don't.
Lyons veered slightly as he neared the edge of the dock, aiming the car between the two concrete pilings supporting the dock railing. It seemed doubtful that the car could thread the gap, but Lyons refused to back down. He eased off the gas only for a split second, then floored the accelerator again, building up a surge of speed as he crashed into the railing. The rails burst free on impact, as did both of the car's side mirrors, and the car went airborne out over the water.
Special delivery!
Standing on the aft deck of the speedboat, Javier Galato had been preparing to fire his shotgun at Detective Atiha. When, to his amazement, the car plowed through the dock railing, he quickly shifted aim to his new target and squeezed the trigger. A 12-gauge round blasted its way through the front grillwork and wreaked havoc on the engine compartment, but did little to stop the car's airborne momentum. He worked the Winchester's pump action, but before he could get another shot off, the car crashed into the rear end of the boat, obliterating the upper half of the gunwale, as well as much of the deck Galato was standing on. The shotgun flew from his grasp, and he was thrown forward, striking his head sharply on the gin pole. Knocked out, he tumbled limply over the crumpled hood of the rental car and splashed into the cold water of the harbor. Inside the cabin, Lyons' crash landing had sent Angelica reeling back from the control console. When she crashed into Guillermo Blanca, the explosives expert dropped the remote control, and together they tumbled to the deck, landing alongside Christopher. The police officer was dazed and bleeding where he'd been struck by flying shards of glass from the shattered windows.
What happened?
I don't know. A grenade or a missile, I think.
Angelica pulled herself away from Blanca. When she tried to stand, she realized the boat was listing sharply to one side. The engines had died as well, and a faint smell of fuel wafted up through the floorboards. She could also smell smoke.
We need to get out of here.
The chopper's searchlight was still flooding the cabin, and when she spotted the remote control, she grabbed it and handed it to Blanca.
But first, set off those explosives at the Civic Center.
Blanca nodded weakly and took the remote. Christopher wiped at the blood that streamed down his face.
There's no time for that. This boat's about to blow.
Angelica ignored the officer and glared at Blanca.
Do it!
Blanca's vision had finally cleared enough for him to be able to read the remote's LED display. As he started to re-enter the detonation commands, Angelica awkwardly crawled to the rear of the cabin, looking for Galato.
Javier!
Christopher drew his gun and lurched past the woman, pushing her aside in his haste to flee the cabin. When he stepped outside, he saw the rental car embedded in the aft deck, weighing the rear of the boat below the waterline. Inside the vehicle, he spotted the same two Americans who'd been in on the loft raid and had later tailed the motorcade leading Galato to the airport. They were struggling to push aside their airbags and get out of the car. Seething with rage, Christopher took aim at Lyons and was about to pull the trigger when a gunshot echoed across the marina. Christopher grunted as a 9mm slug from Etija's pistol punched its way into his chest cavity. He fired wildly and toppled forward, landing next to Galato's fallen shotgun. A few feet away, flames began to poke up through the smoke rising from the boat's engine compartment. Fear registered in Christopher's eyes, but after crawling a few inches away from the flames, he collapsed. He let out one final breath and went limp. Crouched in the cabin doorway, Angelica stared numbly at the blood seeping from beneath Christopher, then shouted at Blanca over her shoulder.
What's taking you so long?
Almost ready.
Blanca had just finished overriding the timers on the explosives at the Civic Center and was about to enter the final commands to set the bombs off. Before he could finish the sequence, however, the boat itself was wrenched by a violent explosion. A fireball shot up through the floorboards and engulfed the cabin with such quick, fiery intensity that the remote was already aflame and had been rendered inoperative by the time Blanca dropped it. He was thrown off his feet by the force of the blast and careened into Angelica, knocking her out onto the deck. Their clothes were on fire, and they both screamed in agony as the rapidly spreading flames seared their flesh. In a matter of seconds, their cries were silenced, along with their hopes of destroying the Civic Square. Carl Lyons and Rosario Blancanales were both still trapped in the car when the boat exploded. The front end took the brunt of the blast and was wrenched free of the aft deck with so much force, the car flipped upside down as it was thrown clear. The windows had blown out, and the moment the car splashed into the marina, water began to surge into the passenger compartment. Neither man had been knocked unconscious, but they were both shaken up, and by the time they regained their bearings, they found themselves underwater. The car was still upside down, and they were both lying on the ceiling, with the airbags undulating eerily beneath them like ghostly sea creatures. Blancanales was the first to orient himself. Reaching out through the cold water, he tapped Lyons' arm, then put a finger to his mouth and pointed up toward the floorboards. Lyons nodded and followed Blancanales' lead, contorting around the airbags and the front seat and extending his body upward until he reached a trapped air pocket just below the dashboard. Both men were gasping for air when the car landed with a gentle thud at the bottom of the marina. Fortunately, they were less than 20 feet down and there was no problem with the water pressure.
You all right?
Yeah, I think so. So much for my Evel Knievel impersonation.
Blancanales forced a grin.
That was some stunt, all right. Next time, I'll watch from the cheap seats, though.
I hear you. Now, let's get out of this bathtub.
Right behind you.
Once the men had filled their lungs, they turned around and worked their way back down to the ceiling, then wriggled their way through the side windows. The water was dark, but as they swam upward, the men could see bits of debris sinking past them. At one point, Lyons had to veer to one side to avoid what he thought was a large chunk of the boat. As it drifted by him, however, he realized it was the half-charred body of a dead woman. The fireball had spared enough of her face for Lyons to recognize Angelica Rigo. Her lifeless eyes stared outward at Lyons, sending a chill down his spine. He quickly swam away from the body and continued upward toward the surface. As the two men neared the surface, a bright shaft of light penetrated the water 20 yards to their left. They shifted course and swam toward the light. Once they reached it, they quickly surfaced, then closed their eyes briefly against the intense glare. They both knew it had to be the spotlight from the helicopter. When they heard someone calling out to them, the men blinked their eyes and saw a UOE commando reaching out from the lower rungs of a rope ladder suspended from the hovering chopper. Lyons was closest, so he grabbed the man's hand first. Once his fingers had closed around one of the ladder's rungs, he let go of the man's hand so that the commando could help Blancanales up as well. Once both men had climbed free of the water, the commando called up to another soldier poised in the doorway of the chopper. The other soldier, in turn, signaled Grimaldi, who took the chopper out of its holding pattern and drifted slowly toward the docks.
If you can't wait for the next installment of your favorite series to hit the shelves, plug into Cutting Audio's website and download it for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com